Today is the 20th of February 2014, and we're here to interview Renata Mackay. Hello, Renata.
Hello.
Could we begin by asking where you were born?
I was born in Cologne, or Köln am Rhein.
And when was that?
1931.
And what was your name at birth?
Renata Friederike Pütz.
Could you tell us a little about your family?
My mother, Elli Hirschberg, was the eldest of six.
She had an unusual profession, didn't she?
Yes. Before the First World War, she had been a receptionist at a photographer's, and in fact she had established herself as a photographer in her own little studio in Berlin.
Which would be, I would have thought, very unusual for a lady to have a profession.
Yes, in 13.
And she was married to a non-Jewish person, did you tell me?
Yes. Do you want this little story
or not? Yes, please.
I don't know how she came to be in Cologne. One night, some of her developing apparatus wasn't working, so she knocked on another door where there was still a light on. A gentleman came to repair it. And perhaps I shouldn't be telling you this, but as a thank you, she invited him for dinner. And I'm afraid my brother, my older brother, 4 years older brother, was a result of this. Right, in 1927, she wanted to have this child. From another family relative, I was told, she'd established herself as with a career, because in Cologne, anybody who wanted to be photographed, a member of council, whatever, came to Elli Hirschberg. And so she wanted to keep this child. But Mathieu Pütz was nice. He actually was a lot younger than her. But he said it was too much of a stigma for a child to be a bastard. So he insisted. So they got married 3 days before my brother was born.
I see.
And am I allowed to go a bit backwards and forwards?
A little.
Well, yes, I would just like to say my adoptive father said later, "You're just like your mother. You can keep neither time nor money."
So tell us a bit about
so what
I
was just going to, because she wasn't very good at her finances, my father took the keys away from her. She went off to Berlin with my big brother, and he came after her, brought her back, and as I say, I'm the result of that.
And then what happened to your mother?
Oh, well, in 1933, there was to be a big march in Cologne. It's just after Hitler came to power, and she decided to take me out to the country until all this was over. And on the way back to the station, it started to rain. She took off her jacket to keep me dry. She developed a cold and took to her bed and died of pneumonia.
Dear.
In 1933.
And your father was left with now two young children.
Yes. And I'm sorry, it's really more important to point out that when she died, her younger sister, who had been married in 1913 and had no children, came literally post-haste to fetch my brother, whom she'd frequently borrowed, and left me behind. Years later, I asked, "Why did you leave me?" He said, "Oh, because her husband, who was Erwin Freundlich, a quite well-known astronomer, associated with Einstein. Anyway, he needed peace and quiet, and children make noise," he said.
So you were left with your father?
I was left with my father and his unmarried sister and his parents. And then after some time, after my mother died, when my father went into his local pub, he was greeted with the words, I hate to say this, but he was greeted with the words, "You'll be glad to be rid of your Jewish whore." And so he, I'm afraid, punched this person in a pub, which wasn't a good idea. So my father went to prison. Time passed. His sister, who was pushing me in a pram round the local park, started objecting because people were asking her if I was her bastard. And the grandparents couldn't cope. My aunt and uncle, the Freundlichs, had already taken shelter in Turkey in 1933. Yeah. So in 1935, he asked them, would they take me as well? My uncle was unable to go back into Germany. through the good offices of yet another sister who was in social work, she hired a nanny who brought me from Cologne to Turkey in 1935.
So you'd have been very young.
I was four.
Which is very young.
Yeah. I remember only part of that journey in that there was a derailment. And, you know, suddenly, I mean, I was asleep, it was at night, and sort of fell out of the bunk and everything stopped. And much later, they must have got another train because we then moved on and the engine was lying there on the embankment. Anyway, we made our way to, I have to look things up on the map and see, I think it must have been Constanza on the Black Sea and got onto a boat, and so possibly also overnight, and arrived in Turkey. And I do remember my uncle and my brother were at the quayside. However, one of the reasons why my grandparents couldn't cope with me was that I was a mewling, puking babe. So I was told. Anyway, okay, I arrived in the morning, came to the house where my aunt and uncle lived and my brother, and I sat at the Kindertisch, little chair. And what did they put in front of me? A bowl of soup. Mm. And apparently I was a Suppenkasper.
What's that mean?
Well, there's that book, Struwwelpeter, you know, there was ein Suppenkasper in that. And I'm afraid I was, perhaps it was the sea voyage, perhaps it was the accident during the night. I was sick in the soup.
Oh dear.
For which, and I have never forgiven them, for never forgiven my aunt, I was spanked.
Oh, that's so unfair.
And put to bed. Years after, I had asked why, because the grandparents complained that I was a Suppenkasper.
And that means, what does Suppenkasper mean?
Somebody who wouldn't eat a soup.
Oh, I see.
I'll have to, I have the Struwwelpeter both in English and in German. Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll show you the story.
But that is terrible. And particularly, you know, you're such a little girl and a terribly long journey. That's
well, I became devoted to the nanny. Mm-hmm. And my aunt only used me as a photographic model. She had shared a studio with my birth mother in 1913. My aunt Kay had graduated from an art school doing batik and bookbinding, and she moved in with my mother. My aunt decided she could see her sister earning a living, she could... Well, you've seen Penguin books. Mm-hmm. Well, the German version of that was Tauchnitz. And people might buy a Penguin edition but wanted it bound, right? Mm-hmm. So because, there was this large Mischborker.
Large family.
Yes, large family. And strangely enough, my aunt and uncle discovered they were related to two Kassira sisters. So then... And my uncle was one of seven, and my aunt was one of six. So there was
a large family.
Right, where were we?
So you were telling...
Oh, yes.
What had your aunt to do with the German version of
Okay, when
of
they
Penguin?
Lived together, my two mothers, obviously Kay learnt quite a lot from Ellie in Turkey. She had an Armenian maid who cooked and did the housework.
Tell us some more about the books then, please, Renata.
Oh, that my aunt felt she could earn her living by binding these Tauchnitz editions, and people could choose, obviously, the leather and the tooling, and also sort of the end papers. I still have one, very amusing, but she made for my uncle before they were married. And as my uncle was very, very tall, the inscription was just, "For mein Kleinen."
For my little one.
Little one.
Oh. And was your uncle Jewish? Is that why they left? Or just
yes.
Well, he was Jewish as well?
Yeah. Although his father had married out, he married a Scottish lady from Gloucester, yes.
Was he practicing as a Jewish person?
No.
But he still had to leave Nazi Germany.
Yes, I'm sorry. Jumping
right.
Backwards and forwards, it is sort of important to the thing. Can we go back to Just arriving in Turkey. I was devoted to my nanny.
Right.
And my aunt basically ignored me. Hmm. My brother went to a school. It's funny, it was an American school just up the hill. And my aunt only used me as a photographic model. She'd learnt the skill from her sister. And in the observatory that my father had established in Turkey, she could develop things there. And forgive me if I go on, but from her travels with my uncle, they'd been to Java, Sumatra, on eclipse expeditions. So she was very interested in everything in Turkey. She wore a cloak, and she had a reflex camera, which she sort of hid inside the cloak. And I'm afraid she took photographs in one of the mosques in Istanbul. And as she also was very clever in handicrafts, she developed this photograph and then put it onto graph paper and made... She stitched them. And I have two items of her work. Actually, my daughter embroidered one of them, and there was a cushion in my aunt's house which was from a tile. And because this cushion was always in that house, when I got married, and I now have a cushion with that particular thing.
So all taken from the tile which she had photographed in the mosque.
Tell us a little about your uncle, if you could, please.
My uncle was Erwin Finlay Freundlich. The Finlay comes from his Scottish mother, from Cheltenham.
I gather he was a very eminent scientist.
He became associated with Einstein. Einstein says that Erwin Freundlich was the first person to offer to make experiments at eclipses to help to prove his theory. I mean, he was the first person who volunteered. In Germany, he became the director of the Einstein Tower in Potsdam, which is now a World Heritage Site. And strangely enough, I happened one day to be in the Glasgow School of Art, where there was a Erich Mendelssohn exhibition.
Mm-hmm. The architect?
The architect, yes. And going along the walls, there were sort of what you call explanatory panels. And I looked at one and I thought, that's funny. That looks like Erwin's writing. And it was. It was my father, with Erwin, my uncle, who became later my adoptive father, who had met Erich Mendelssohn through Ed Mendelssohn's wife, Louisa Maas, who was a cellist. And my uncle was learning to play the cello. That's the connection between Erwin and Erich Mendelssohn. Louisa Mendelssohn and K. Freundlich were invited 50 years after the building of the Einstein Tower for the celebrations. Yeah. But both ladies decided they were in their 80s and didn't want to go. But I'm sorry to digress, but in 1990... three, I happened to be in Berlin, and the wall hadn't come down, decided I wanted to go to Potsdam, and arrived at the gate of this scientific park. And at the gate, I mentioned that my father had worked there. And so the gate man gave me, first of all, a leaflet and told me which way to go. And so I went, I think he rang up, and so the director met me. And I was totally gobsmacked when I entered, because on the one wall, there was a woodcut by another famous German. I'll have to think hard. I'll come back to what his name was. So there was woodcut just of the head of Erwin. And on that wall, on the other wall, an enormous photograph of Erwin sitting on the packing cases of his instruments, waiting to go, getting ready to go on one of these eclipse expeditions to the Far East, Java and Sumatra. But that was 93, and he'd left Germany in 33.
My goodness, you must have been proud.
Gobsmacked.
Yes.
Not only, though, the director said, there were obviously some roads, but there were also kinds of footpaths. And one of these footpaths was called the Freundlichweg.
Amazing.
Some years later, my son with his wife and two gorgeous daughters went also to visit it. And so my daughter-in-law gave me this photograph of them standing underneath Freundlichweg. And she captioned this photograph, "In the family way."
That's great.
I'm sorry, I digress.
That's fascinating. Let's go back to Turkey in 1937. I think you said that's when you had to leave.
No, we didn't have to leave. No. He was experiencing difficulties. Anyway, the German-speaking university in Prague, the Charles University, was looking for an astronomer who could establish yet another observatory and Department of Astronomy. And strangely enough, the man who was in charge of interviewing or finding these people was somebody called Wenzel Pollack, who also was associated with Einstein. Anyway, he wrote to a whole lot of people, some Nobel Prize winners. There were three people shortlisted for this post in Prague, and they all came down in favour of Erwin Finley Freundlich. So he was offered the job and said, however, we had then had German citizenship. He couldn't go back so close to Germany without some guarantee of protection. Mm-hmm. So we became Czech citizens before we even set foot in Czechoslovakia. Mm. And to digress even further, all during the war, there was a Czech government in exile, and my father had to go down there every 2 years to get a fresh stamp on his passport. And in the course of time, he met the young Jan Masaryk and also Beneš, who became, for a short time, the president of Prague. And they would come and visit the observatory in St. Andrews.
We've jumped a wee bit. Let's go back.
Okay. All I was trying to say was that, if I may, to say, my aunt only used me as a photographic model when there was film left in the camera. And there's one very cute photograph where I've been woken from my rest and I'm sort of standing there dreamy-eyed, just so she could finish the reel and go off and develop it.
So tell us about Prague then. Did you actually go to Prague then?
Yes, in 37.
Right. And how long were you there?
I became six, which is the normal school entry age on sur le continent, as Jimmy Young, isn't it, Jimmy, would say. And so I went to school, and what did I get? First of all, I got measles.
It was quite dangerous, actually.
Well, it started slowly, and my father, being at the university, he, of course, asked various other medical professors to come and look, and somebody found the coplic spots inside my mouth, which are, first identification. So I was barely finished with the measles when I developed whooping cough. And then I whooped and I whooped until my mother got me up because there were no more blankets for my bed.
Eventually, did you get to school?
Yes.
And by that time, could you speak a little Czech?
No. I only have one sheet of my school report, which was just sort of the signing off because we were leaving to go to Scotland.
So how long did you attend school for?
About a year, but most of it having measles and whooping cough.
Right.